Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special edition of Daytime After Dark in the morning, 10 p.m. Remember, the phone number to call us on is 134-1350-1340. Well, I will give it to you in a minute. Today's guest, we are having, I think, one of the best books I have read in a long time, you know, and like I've said on previous shows, I want to take the Scientology down for all this pain they cause people, and then they want to lie about, oh, we don't disconnect from families, BS. And so I want to be one to welcome the most amazing book I read of the year, Karen Seuss Presley, and that song you heard, On the Wings of Love, she wrote that with her ex-husband. So, hi, Karen.
Hi, Carly.
Okay, so no, that song, I mean, I didn't know that you and P.O. did years ago, but that song I've loved ever since day one in 82, even though I was way young in 82, but I'm not saying how young I was. But that song was incredible. I mean, people still listen to it to this day. I mean, people play it at weddings. You know, I don't think they will play it at funerals. But I think that is the best song ever, and I just been dying to tell you that because I cannot stop listening to it, and I've listened to it probably all weekend, like, you know, 70 times. So yes, it's clearly in my head, but I love your book, Escaping Scientology, An Inside True Story. My journey with a cult celebrity, spirituality, greed, and power. I love that title, because what it is exactly what you said in the title, Karen, is they are doing something wrong there, and no one wants to say, wait a moment, look at this. You know, open your eyes, mental health people. Open your eyes. There's so much that I feel like Scientology took away from people. And can you tell everyone, number one, how you got into Scientology, and number two, how did you feel when you finally left and you just left with barely any, you know, suitcases?
Those are great questions, Carly. First of all, I want to thank you for playing part of that On the Wings of Love song at the beginning of the show, and thank you for all your wonderful thoughts about that song, because that song, you know, it had a lot to do with a good bit of a part of my life, and it represents a very happy time in my life when, you know, my husband at the time, Peter, and I, we moved out to Hollywood to really make it in our careers. And Peter was, of course, a musician and composer, and I was a fashion designer. So when Peter wrote On the Wings of Love in 1982, it really catapulted our career, and it represents really the happiest years of my life in California. And it was right after Peter wrote On the Wings of Love that we got involved in Scientology. You asked me to talk about how we got involved. It seemed like a lot of the musicians that we were meeting in Hollywood were, you know, people that had already got involved in Scientology, and they would tell Peter, you know, you really ought to check this out. It would help your communication skills and, you know, as a musician. And so we checked it out. We just took some basic courses, you know, the inexpensive $50 courses. But from there, we got so deeply involved in Scientology that Peter actually stopped writing less music. And instead of becoming a better musician as a result of getting into Scientology, he just became a better Scientologist. And he stopped publishing songs. So On the Wings of Love was his biggest hit. And yes, he wrote a couple others, but after Scientology, really, honestly, his career declined, and we got so involved in the Celebrity Center in Hollywood that we actually ended up walking out of our careers, and instead of doing better in our careers as a result of getting in Scientology, we did less in our careers, and we got more involved in Scientology, and like I said, we walked out of our careers, and we got involved in the Sea Organization, which is the management group. And once we did that, that was basically the end of our careers. And we became radicalized, honestly, by Scientology in the Sea Org. That was the process of radicalization. So I was in Scientology a total of 16 years. And I escaped twice and went back just because Peter had not left with me and I wanted to keep my marriage together. But I came back after the second time. I stayed 5 more years, and then I tried to talk Peter into leaving with me so we could put our lives back together. But he just was so blind and so indoctrinated that he was just completely sold out to Scientology. And I realized, Carly, that I had lost him. And once I realized I had lost him, I finally escaped the third time in 1998, and I never went back. So when I escaped, you asked me, how did I feel? Are you kidding me? It's like, you know, in one way, I was completely devastated because I had lost the love of my life. I had lost all my friends. I lost everything that I was familiar with. I lost everything I owned. But yet, I gained my freedom. I gained my family. And I gained my ability to have to start completely over. So I started life over. Let's see, that was 1998. So I was around 45 years old at that time. So basically I started life completely over with nothing. No husband, no possessions, no home, no money. And but I was so happy to be free. And I was so happy to be out and just with my family again.
Well, that's the whole, because I had Solly Newgrove. Hi, Solly. He's probably listening on it. And his story was really good, too. But then his son is still in Scientology. And he told me on the interview that his son got into Facebook somehow and found out what he was posting and what they were doing. You know, watching, he called up and goes, "Dad, are you watching the Leah show?" And he goes, "Yeah, I love it. You know, they are my friends on it." And the son hung up, and I'm like, okay, so you're going to hang up with your father and lose that relationship with your father over this Scientology, which is, to me, it was, to me as a person, and I've heard about Scientology for the last, I will say 1990, and I'm like thinking, why is everyone sacrificing their life? Excuse me, with that fog in the, why are people going through this hell? I mean, for you and Peter, it was almost like, okay, you're a great songwriter, you know, come on, come in, we will help you. But that was never going to be the case. They lie how to get you guys in. And once you get in, you probably don't see, oh, God, what did I just do? Is that how you felt as the years went on?
You know, once you get involved in Scientology, let me say this in the beginning. It's not like when you get involved in Scientology, it's not like you're deciding, I think I'm going to join a cult today. You know, you don't, when we got involved, which was the early 80s, we didn't think of it as a cult because, honestly, we had very little information about it. We didn't have any bad background. We hadn't heard a bunch of negative things. And we didn't have the internet at the time. So,
true.
Nor did we have cell phones. So we had no internet and no cell phones. So in those days, it's not like we could just, you know, go online and research Scientology. It just wasn't available. So the only thing you could find out is the information that they put out about it. You know, or if you met somebody who had taken a course or whatever, and that's the only way you can find out about it. So when you get involved in Scientology at that time, it was completely different than now. And the way it is now, thank God we have the internet, because now people can Google what is Scientology and find out the truth. And, you know, as long as you inform yourself, you can prevent yourself from being hurt by the group. But like I said, at that time, we didn't have that advantage.
No, and I mean, you know, I've heard of, you know, 40 years of ex-Scientologists that finally left, and they don't want to say, they will never admit there is sex abuse going on there. There are abuse going on, physical and mental abuse. And when you have a leader, David McCavish, calling out the orders like a mob hit, that's how I take it. He called out the orders like a mob hit, because if someone wasn't in line, then you guys got in trouble, right?
That's exactly right. You know, I started out at the Celebrity Center, which was a completely different way of life. It was, at the time, it was fun. We actually, you know, in the early part of the 80s, we were actually enjoying sort of like the community of artists and celebrities that were at Scientology. And when I started working for the organization, I started to get a completely different picture. But by 1989, Peter and I walked out of our careers, and we got into the upper management of Scientology, where we went out to the international management base, and that's where we were working directly under David Miscavige. And that was from late 89 until 1998. I worked under him for 9 years. And that is where the pedal hit the metal, so to speak. It's, you know, we saw what was really going on that people couldn't see at the Celebrity Center level. We saw what was really going on in management. David Miscavige was a tyrant. He was psychologically abusive. I saw years of physical abuse where he would do anything from push his staff up against the wall, grab them by their tie until they choked. I've seen him physically humiliate people as a form of psychological abuse. I saw him one time put a woman make a woman stand up on a conference table and surrounded her with about 50 staff, and then he proceeded to humiliate her verbally so that everybody would look up at her and listen to him abusing her. And at that time, he was abusing a woman named Jure Jory, and he was criticizing her for the size of her breasts and how she shook her breasts as she walked around the inner base, and that he accused her of causing men to be distracted and to look at her. So, you know, had that happened in any corporate situation, he would have been arrested for many things, including sexual harassment and abuse, psychological abuse, and probably, you know, sued for millions of dollars. But he got away with it because he's within the safe confines of his empire within Scientology management. And, of course, he's not – nobody ever says anything to him about what he's doing. He's completely unchecked. There's no checks and balances. He's a tyrant, and he gets away with it, and everybody stands there and lets him do it, which makes all of the staff complicit in his abusive behavior. So, in my opinion, all of his staff that let him get away with it are complicit in that abuse.
You know, exactly. And when you were working at Celebrity Center, what was your job for, were you supposed to bring in all the celebrities, or what were you supposed to do there?
Yeah, I started out with my husband Peter and I. We were recruiting celebrities into Scientology. And, you know, the definition of a celebrity at that time was an artist or anyone important in their sphere of career in the area of art, sports, management, and government, and anyone within that person's entourage. So it could be like their secretary, their assistant, their hairdresser, their driver. So it's the celebrity themselves and their entourage. Those all count as celebrities. So Peter and I was in the fashion business, and I would talk to all of my clients about Scientology. My manager, who used to work for the MASH TV show at Aaron Spelling Productions, I brought her in. Gosh, there were so many people. You know, we talked to everybody that we knew about Scientology. My husband, Peter, was working for Cher. That was his first gig in Hollywood. And, so we talked to Cher's boyfriend, Les Dudek, about Scientology. We talked to Frank Stallone about it, and we asked Frank Stallone to talk to his brother Sylvester Stallone about it. So
it was going crazy, wasn't it? Oh, no. Okay. I think maybe, okay. We lost you. I'm sure to be able to call back.
It's me.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey.
I know, I'm just waiting for her to come back, maybe. Here she is. I will put you back on hold. Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry. We got, I think my phone dropped the call. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That happens all the time here.
Okay. We were talking about bringing, recruiting my job at the time. I started out as a volunteer recruiting celebrities for Scientology. And then Peter and I brought in quite a few different people. We were talking about Frank Stallone and working on Sylvester Stallone. We brought in some of the musicians from Santana Band. Gosh, this was back in the 80s. So, and then we both joined the C organization. And when I joined the C organization, I became part of the management staff. And I was what was called the commanding officer of the Celebrity Center Network.
We had celebrity centers all around the world, New York, Paris, London, Nashville, Chicago, Los Angeles. There were 13 altogether. And my job was to make sure that all the different celebrity centers were recruiting celebrities into Scientology. So, you know, the big thing about that job, Carly, was what other church do you know? What other church do you know that has a separate, completely separate buildings and a separate network for their celebrity members?
And that's what I mean. Because I love you, by the way. I forgot to tell you, I love you on Liga. So you were really good. I was hoping they would do a whole hour with you myself because it was interesting what you were saying on there. And then, you know, a light bulb came while you were on the show, a light bulb came on in my head. It goes, wait a moment. If you go even back to 2000 and for people, you know, to see what was going on. And I think when Andrew Moten wrote that book on Tom Cruise in 2006, and, you know, really expose this, you know, cult. But I don't call it cult, Karen. I call it, all of you guys were brainwashed. All of you guys had that, when someone gets kidnapped and they just, you know, stay with the person. Oh, it's almost like a really bad breakup. Like, you know, in your heart, maybe you should break up with them, and then you don't, and then you just keep on, you know, going and going and going. Is that how you felt?
Very much so. I mean, what you're describing there is, you know, getting into a, like when you get kidnapped, you're obviously in a dangerous position with your kidnappers, your perpetrators, and you know, some people refer to that as the Stockholm syndrome, where you start feeling sympathetic toward your kidnapper, or you start developing some sort of emotional feelings toward them, like some sort of sympathy or empathy. And in a way, that's I guess you could say that happens to some degree in Scientology, in the sense that, you know, when you become radicalized by the group, by the time you put yourself in a position of being radicalized, you're willing to, you know, get rid of your old thoughts and your old emotions, and you take on the thoughts and emotions of the person dominating you. But that's part of the indoctrination of Scientology. It's a very slow, gradual process, and that L. Ron Hubbard created it that way. It's a form of brainwashing. There's no question about it. It's absolutely thought control. It because the process of Scientology controls your thoughts, your emotions, your ability, your mobility, and your behavior.
Yep.
So you become very, that's the radicalization of Scientology. And you're not aware of it happening while it's happening. It's a very slow, gradual process. And so by the time as you become radicalized, you really develop into a fanatical Scientologist, and you lose your perspective from the outside world. You know, you're no longer thinking straight like a realistic individual who belongs to, you know, any sort of social community. You are now separated. It's like you're in a completely separate world that has a group think. It's just like George Orwell's 1984. Everybody thinks the same way. You think the same way. You follow commands. You follow orders. And you've pretty much lost your ability to think independently. But the saddest thing is, and I think that this has been expressed really well on Leah Remini's show, Scientology and Aftermath, the saddest thing about it is that as you become radicalized by Scientology, you really do lose perspective, and you start discarding all of your outside friends and your family. And you start looking at your family and your friends as if they're enemies if they don't agree with Scientology. So that's the sick part of it, the part that's really, really unhealthy. And because it leads to destruction in your relationships. Pretty soon, you think it's a sane thing to do to disconnect from your mother or to get rid of your spouse if they don't like Scientology, and you start thinking that that's the best decision, because Scientology teaches you to make decisions based on the greatest good for the greatest number of dynamics, but what you're really making decisions on is the greatest good for Scientology's objectives, not for your own personal moral compass. So, but, you know, by the time you start doing that, you've already become radicalized, and you're not even aware, you've lost perspective that's the wrong thing to do. So as you see on like Leah Remini's show, or like you read in my book, you know, they practice disconnection. So in my case, when I wanted out of Scientology, I didn't want out of my marriage. I just wanted out of Scientology.
Oh,
specifically,
yeah.
Out of the Sea Org. And, you know, heck, I escaped twice and came back because I loved my husband. I didn't want to leave him. And, you know, I failed to see that I really lost him. So long story short, when I left the Sea Org, he disconnected from me. And that was a 20-year marriage that we got rid of because he felt that he needed to disconnect from me based on the greatest good for Scientology. So that's, you know, on Leah Remini's show, that's what you see, dozens and dozens of people telling true stories about, you know, disconnecting from family. It's very, very destructive.
Well, yeah, and my thing is, too, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, but when Tom Cruise is, like, quote-unquote, the biggest Scientologist next to John Travolta, people think. But I took a step back a couple of years ago after Tom Cruise went on a rampage about book seals having postpartum, how dare she take medicine and make her feel better, come over to our side and take vitamins and exercise, you're going to be okay. And that moment, really, I never said anything like this before, but at that moment Tom Cruise said that, I wanted to reach into the TV screen and strangle him, because I think that's, I know, that's not mean, Karen, I'm sorry, but it just, it hit a noob that I couldn't explain. It's like, wait a moment. You are telling a woman what the heck, that she can do with her body, with her life. And, you know, it just felt like, you know, Tom Cruise, John Travolta, used to be like the highest paid actors around in the 80s and 90s. But like you said about Peter losing himself and not really doing music anymore, I feel like Tom Cruise and John Travolta don't do a lot of movies. And when they do movies, they suck now, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm like looking at them like, you know what, you were the biggest thing ever, and then you're doing this. And people have lost all respect for them. I mean, I think...
Yes.
And I know you wasn't there at the time that John Travolta's son, you know, died. But in my view, it was he had autism and he was having seizures. And you leave him in the bathroom by himself, and then he's dead, and he would not have been dead if they would just gave him anti-seizure medicine and helped him. And for me, I just wanted, at that moment, I wanted Scientology to go down. Because how can John and Kelly say, oh, it's the same old son died, but the sisters told us what we should do about it. You know, that's why I think the Mental Health Society needs to wake up. I think doctors need to wake up. I think everyone needs to wake up. And we're like, this is not a cult. This is the worst thing you can ever get, you know, through. And when you left the church, when Mike Winter left the church, Leah left the church, Paul Hagen, you had all these people leaving, and I thought when, you know, a lot of people left, that would speak volumes, and the other celebrities would say, oh my God, what am I doing? Why am I here? But no, they stayed, mm-hmm. and I will never understand why, you know, Scientology is saying that, oh, we don't disconnect from your family, from your friend, and that is not the truth. And what breaks my heart for you that you lost Peter over something that could have been avoidable in my, you know, in my...
Yes,
because in a marriage, I'm sorry to interrupt you, in a marriage, like, if your wife is Catholic and your husband is Jewish, they don't break away from each other because they, you know, one is going, you know, one is doing the Jewish thing, one is doing the Catholic thing. They don't break up over that. I mean, that would be a hard thing in a marriage too. But a lot of people don't break up for that. So they are getting brainwashed. And, you know, so how long were you in Scientology for altogether?
A total of 16 years.
Wow.
I was in for a total of 16 years, which, you know, was really at the peak of my young adult life. So I missed out on the very years that most people are out, you know, building a career, building a family, and peeking out on their income and even saving for retirement. So, you know, when I got out, of course, I had missed 16 years. So when I got out, all I could do, I mean, at first it was just shockingly depressing to think about how, you know, I had wasted 16 years of my life, but I could not stay stuck thinking about that. All I could think about was moving forward and being really excited to be free. Made me feel like all I wanted to do was make up for lost time. So I did. I saw everybody in my family that I hadn't seen in 16 years. I went back to college. I completed a bachelor's degree. Then I went on to get a master's degree. Then I started teaching college, teaching writing at university level. I went out and got a real estate license. I married. You know, I just really made up for lost time. I had so many things to do on my bucket list, and I wasn't happy unless I had 10 plates spinning in the air at the same time. And people would say to me, God, how could you have so many projects, you know, going on at the same time? And I said, are you kidding me? I have a lot of living to make up for. So, you know, I addressed my new life with a lot of zest and energy, and I accomplished a lot. But Carly, I just want to reflect back on something you said. You were talking
about.
Yeah,
go ahead.
You were saying that when I left, Mike Rinder left, Leah Remini left, Paul Haggis left, and you were saying, you know, you were hoping that a lot more people would leave. And you could never understand why they stayed. I just want to address that because the people that remain stuck in Scientology, yes, they're brainwashed. Yes, they're not thinking clearly for themselves. They only think as a Scientologist. But there are other factors that keeps them locked in. And the biggest ones are that Scientology policy requires that if they were to leave Scientology, everybody that they knew, like their friends and their family members who stayed in, would have to disconnect from them. So a lot of people stay in Scientology just because they don't want to be subject to the cruel disconnection policy. They don't want to lose their friends and family. So there's a lot of people that call themselves Scientologists, but they're really under the radar. They're really not practicing Scientology. They just don't make it known that they're really not wanting to be a member anymore because they don't want to be subject to the policy of disconnection. And the other reason people stay in, I think a secondary reason, I think there's three main reasons. Number one, the disconnection policy. Number two might be fear of repercussion, because everybody in Scientology discloses all their deepest, darkest secrets, and those secrets are used by the church against you in the case that you ever leave. They use those secrets to basically blackmail you, and because they do have a policy where they feel free to destroy you utterly if you ever speak out about Scientology. So that's another reason why they stay in. People stay in. They don't want their secrets disclosed, and they don't want to be attacked by the organization. And the third reason that they stay in is because a lot of people have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in Scientology, and it's very difficult to say, oh, I made a mistake. I spent all that money, and I no longer believe in it. And so to walk away is like wasting all that money. And Scientology lies and says that they will give you a refund, but it is next to impossible to get a refund. So, you know, those are the three biggest reasons why people stay. And I just want to address one other point. You were talking about Tom Cruise attacking Brooke Shields for the decisions she made about her own body and taking her medication. Mm-hmm. That's because, and this is something that continues to go on, is that Scientology implants phobias in its members against the mental health profession. They implant phobias about seeking psychological help. And everybody who's a Scientologist thinks that psychologists and psychiatrists are bad, that psychiatric medication is bad. And you brought up the example of John and Jet Travolta, and that Jet mm-hmm. Travolta died because he was on he wasn't being given his seizure medication. I mean, that was mm-hmm. a choice that Kelly Preston and John Travolta made. They chose to withhold anti-seizure medication. And so to that extent, they were responsible for Jet's death, because as Scientologists, they didn't believe in psychiatric medication. And instead, they chose to have him do the purification rundown, which, of course, is ridiculous to think that sweating and vitamins is going to
do
get
it.
Rid of the cause of his physical condition that caused him to have seizures. So there's a lot of things that Scientology does that is very, very destructive. And I can only think, you know, shows like yours that interview ex-Scientologists, shows like Leah Remini that bring people on that expose the stories to tell their truth, blogs like Tony Ortega's and Mike Rinder's that constantly are reporting on this, because and then the Hollywood Reporter picks up on this, and pretty soon, you know, now this is something that I wanted to mention while we were on the show together. Now what's happening is that the critics of Scientology are finally changing the narrative about Scientology, because for years, for the first couple of decades, Scientology was in control of its own narrative. Like, anything that public knew about Scientology was only what Scientology would say about it. Like, you could only hear about Scientology from its own perspective. But, and so they were in control of the narrative. So they could lie to people and no one would ever know it, because Scientology was so secretive, you just couldn't get any information. Now, with so many critics telling the truth about what really happened, we are changing the narrative. And so I think it's really important for everyone to change the narrative about Scientology, to tell the truth. If you've had experiences with it, expose them, because without the exposure, there's no way for the truth to be known or justice to be had. And I want to mention just a couple things. Another way to change the narrative is to stop referring to Scientology as a church.
Exactly.
It's not a church. A cult pretending to be a church that is actually a business that actually extorts its members and delivers fraudulent services. So let's stop calling Scientology a church. Let's stop pretending that it deserves to have. Let's stop pretending that it deserves to have tax exempt status. It doesn't. There's a lot of people working to expose that, and that is going to happen. They are going to lose their tax exempt status because they do not deserve it.
Well, that's the thing, you know, I find funny, and I'm not getting political, but I kind of, because I've said it to someone the other day, I go, Scientology is almost what is going on in the White House. That's how I think of it. I mean, I know a lot of people don't want to be political, but with me, I'm like, wait a moment. You know, I mean, the way he's acting now is the same way I think David McKess has acted for years and years and years. And I just think that is crazy. And my other point, what year did you leave for good? What year were you gone?
1998, I finally got out.
Yeah, you know, because I'm like, listening to your talk, I'm like, I wonder if she was at Tom and Katie's wedding. You know, because from the outside looking into that wedding, I just felt like it was like almost a reality show that the Scientologists were doing. You know, because when Leah, I feel so bad for Leah because all Leah wanted to do was pick up Suri, give her a hug, she was crying. And suddenly she got an honors report with, you know, if you can explain what an honors report is. And when Leah said that, I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to let a little baby cry by yourself and not pick her up? That also, I think people need to really address that. When you're 8 years old, you're no longer a kid. You are a sealed member in a Scientologist. At 8 years old and then 12 years old, they are making these kids sign a billion-year contract. And I always laugh about the billion years. I'm like, really? We are going to be here for a billion years? And Juan Havel is going to come back from the dead after that. I mean, I know I should make fun of it, but if you just sat down and think, wait a moment, what, you know, about the billion-year contract, about the NARS reports, about when you do something wrong in the SEAL, they are going to put you in a closed jail until you submit to them with is another thing people don't realize about this, you know, this place that they are doing. They are putting people in jail because, oh my God, they thought of an idea today and it wasn't David McCavish's idea, so they are going to get punished. I will never understand that.
Well, regarding the billion-year contracts, you know, that's one of the more bizarre things that occurs in Scientology, and that's a great example of how people get radicalized. You know, it only somebody who is a radicalized Scientologist would sign a billion-year contract thinking that they're going to commit all of their future lifetimes to, you know, preserving Scientology. So, you know, now Scientology has a lot of weird beliefs. But, you know, let's admit it, a lot of religions have some really weird beliefs. And I do agree with Leah Remini on the point of, I think we should focus more on their behavior and their policies and their practices.
Yep.
Because I think people should be able to do what they believe. Of course, I don't believe in anything to do with Scientology anymore, so I have rejected all Scientology beliefs, but nevertheless, I stay focused on more so their behavior, especially their destructive behavior and their policies that hurt people. And I think that I think that it's really important to talk about those, the behavior and the policies, because heck, as a Christian, I believed some pretty weird things. If you think about it, you know what I mean? I think most religions have some pretty weird beliefs, but I do think that it's all about behavior, policies and practices and how it affects somebody's life. And so I really appreciate you, you know, having me on the show to talk about these things and giving me a chance to explain, talk about some of my experiences. And I really appreciate you reading my book and promoting
it.
Oh,
no, I told my mom I'm reading this, and my mom's like, oh my gosh, when you done give me, you know, the copy, and like I was telling her everything in your book, everything in Mark's handling book too. It's like, and that's why I wanted to ask you. We'll probably go a little over because there's just something in my brain that I just thought of. When you were at the Celebrity Center and you were bringing people in, did you get like a bonus for bringing people in? Oh, did you just bring people in and that was the end of it?
Oh, no. It's very money motivated. That is a great question, Carly. And this is something I talked about when I was on the Leah Remini's show. We talked about recruiting celebrities. And I did write about this in my book, too. When you bring in somebody into Scientology, whether they're a celebrity or not, doesn't matter who they are. When you bring somebody into Scientology and that person, let's say you bring in your friend Tom, and Tom decides to do the communication course, and then Tom buys a bunch of tapes and books. Okay, because you brought Tom in, you're going to make a commission on everything Tom spends. So if he buys Scientology auditing, you're going to get... If he buys Scientology auditing and he spends like $2,000 or $5,000 on auditing, you get 10% of that. So you get $500 if he spends $5,000, okay? You get a commission. And if he buys books and tapes or if he buys an e-meter or anything else, you get 15% of that. So, you know, it's very, very money motivated. And there are... People make so much money on commissions by bringing people into Scientology, or used to anyway, that a lot of people were able to quit their full-time jobs and just do nothing but recruit people into Scientology. I mean, I knew people back in the day in L.A. that, you know, drove like Lamborghinis because they were making so much money bringing people into Scientology. So... There were plenty of people that earned six-figure incomes just from bringing people into Scientology. Now, I question how much of that is going on today. Not that they have stopped paying commissions, because they haven't stopped paying commissions, but it's really hard to bring somebody into Scientology today because it has such a bad reputation. So, I don't think as many people are making money off of Scientology like they did back in the 80s and 90s when less was known about it.
Well, and it's, you know, and like I said at the top of the show, when you look at celebrities right now that are quote-unquote in Scientology, a lot of their careers are suffering, and they don't see it. They see, you know, okay, it's fine. But I feel like every movie right now that Travolta and Cruz are going to make, they probably have to go David McTavish. Oh, are you okay with me making this movie? Because if you're not, I won't do it because I don't want to give the black eye, you know, of Scientology if I do this movie.
No, you're making a great point because – you see fewer and fewer Scientology celebrities in the forefront anymore making movies. Like, one of the only people that we've noticed getting awards, for example, is Elizabeth Moss, who has the show on Hulu. And she's won a couple of different awards as Best Actress for that show. And but you don't see too many other people getting awards anymore, or anybody in the forefront who's a Scientology actor or actress. I mean, when was the last time John Travolta or Tom Cruise was awarded?
Exactly.
You, they don't.
Exactly, and no one.
And,
yeah. Oh,
yeah,
sorry, interrupt you. You are right.
Yeah. Well, the point is that Scientology, it doesn't necessarily. I think it's hurt people's careers more so than it helped, because their policies are so destructive,
mm-hmm.
and they're so radicalizing. You're so, you know, you become a social pariah when you're a Scientologist anymore, because it's almost like you've got, you know, a red blotch on your forehead for being a Scientologist anymore. People don't want to be around you. They don't want you to talk about weird Scientology ideas. They don't want to be recruited, and they don't want to be chased after. It's a black mark now to be a Scientologist in Hollywood.
Well, I think so. I mean, right now it's a black mark to be in Scientology, and it's finally a black mark to the whole sexual harassment thing. You know,
yeah.
It kind of, you know, you think of those. But, you know, what I come out to was Christy Alley was on Dancing with the Stars, and then, you know, Leah was. And they had the same partner. No, Christy had Max, and Leah had Tony. And what I got mad about was the fact that Christy Alley went on Some of Science told everyone Leah Remini is a bigot. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Hey, on what ground is he a bigot? On what ground? And then this weekend, you know, there was a story coming out about, I don't know if you know this, about Paul Hagen.
Mm-hmm.
Quote-unquote, sexual, you know, he got accused. And I'm thinking, no, this is nothing about sexual harassment. I bet you money,
mm-hmm.
like $1 million, which I don't have $1 million, but I bet you someone in Scientology is behind that.
Well, there's a lot of information being collected about that right now, Carly, because many people suspected that the Scientology Syndicate, I will not call them a church, the Scientology Syndicate was after Paul Haggis trying to destroy his career. And about a week or two ago, Tony Ortega's blog reported on the fact, and so did Yasher, who writes for the New York, for the New Yorker,
yep.
reported on the fact that two women finally came forward and said that a Scientology executive had approached them about getting information from Paul Haggis's personal files and disclosing it to make it public so that they could use it to incriminate Paul Haggis. So they've already started collecting evidence that there is some, you know, dirty tricks going on regarding trying to frame and incriminate Paul Haggis. So we suspected
yeah.
that this would be happening. We just, you know, a lot of people are trying to collect the information and make it public, because it's so easy to, you know, to see that how Scientology would be trying to take Paul Haggis down.
Well, yeah, and that's when I was reading the first two lines, my thing was, son of a bitch. So, I'm sorry for saying that, but I'm like, what? You're already trying to take everyone down, and now you're going to do that to him for what? Because what? He was one of the first celebrities that opened his eyes to you guys and said, this is nuts. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, I will probably want you on for part two, because I just feel like there's so much I want to cover, so much I want to know. Would you be happy? I mean, would you want to do a part two? Because I think with more and more things coming out, with everything going on, I would love to talk to you about your take on what is going on right now with, you know, like Leah said, we have to look at the behavior. We have to look at
the policies, you know, the behavior.
Posies and mm-hmm. you know, what they are doing. And I would love
right.
To have you on for a part two, because of this. I thought, oh, yeah, you know, we can cover everything in an hour. And my mom goes,
right.
really? My mom laughed, and mom goes, really, with the way you think? Because I never write down my crescent. I've never done that because it's all in my head with my head, you know, has a lot of mm-hmm. information in it. So, yeah, but I would love to have you back, because this has been an amazing almost hour. But I want to, before you go, I just want to bring on my co-host, Bobby. Hey, Bobby,
okay.
do you
hey.
Have a question?
Hey, Karen. I really enjoyed the interview, and I love the song. I just joined in prior when Carly came on the air, but I've heard the song before, and it's a fabulous song. And I do agree with Carly, it should be played at weddings and all that stuff. But very quickly, because it's almost time for me to go to work. When you look at all the celebrities going on in Hollywood with all the news that connected to Scientology, how can we, I don't want to just have Scientology go into other religions like Catholic or Buddhism or anything like that.
Yeah, clarify your question for me. I realize you're addressing all the celebrities in Scientology. Ask me the question again.
Well, how would this compare with other religions? Because I've heard a lot about Scientology in the past. But
yeah, okay. Well, Scientology is very, very different from Christianity. It's the opposite. Christians believe that God created the world. Scientologists believe that they created the world. Scientologists believe that they existed since before the beginning of time and that they brought everything into existence. So Scientologists believe themselves to have godlike powers, basically. And Scientologists believe that they have always lived since before the beginning of time, and that they take on new bodies lifetime after lifetime. They carry their minds with them, but their body dies, and then they take on a new body. So those are some of the basic beliefs, and you could compare that with, you know, how it conflicts with Christianity and Judaism and Hinduism, for that matter.
Right. Well, you answered my question, and I would like to just say it was a pleasure to talk to you. I'm at my job right now, so I better get going before I get fired. And Carly, I do want to say thank you for having Karen and me on the show today. And I look forward to talking to you on Friday.
But do not get fired, Bobby. Do not get fired. Go look.
Okay, I better hang up
Bobby,
now because my boss
you.
Is looking at me funny. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Bobby.
Good to talk with you.
Well, yes, Bobby. I kind of got Bobby into this whole Scientology thing. And, you know, and my other co-hosts, David and Maggie, wanted to be here, but I think Maggie didn't sleep that well last night. And I really don't know where David is. But like I said, before we go off air, would it be okay if we can do a part two? Because I think there's so much we can talk about, so much we can do, you know.
Sure,
let's
do a part two.
Yeah, because
sure,
I'm starting to... Yeah, I'm starting to think, and this just dawned on me when Sully was on really quick. He said, and I said, Sully, why can people get a foundation for anyone that leaves Scientology? There's a foundation that they can just go get some money and, you know, be able to leave this place. But, you know, I mean, no one can start out on $200 or whatever that, you know, they have in their pocket. So what mm-hmm. do you think of that idea about a foundation? Because that just came in on my mind about 3 weeks ago.
Well, I think that that's a beautiful idea. A lot of people who come out of the Sea Org particularly need help. Because people who are general Scientologists, they, you know, they live in private homes and they're able to keep a job and they can earn income. It's the people that are in the Sea Org that dedicate their life to it, and they only make $50 a week. So one of the things that keeps people from escaping the Sea Org is that they don't have any money and they have nowhere to go. So if there was a foundation to help people like that, I think that would be wonderful.
Well, yeah,
I think that would help. It would help to get a lot of people out. It would, because a lot of people, like I said, a lot of people stay in because they don't have a way to survive after they get out. So that would be very beautiful.
Yeah, and I mean, really, when you do your escape, sometimes you don't even have a call, and that is just, you know, I mean, some people don't even have driver's license, and, you know, this is a slippery thing that people can do, and yes, we will do a part two, because this is very interesting, and if you talk to Leah, Mike Brennan, please tell them about my show, tell them if they ever want to come on, I would love them, and I hope we are getting a season three of Leah's show, because I think after you see won the Emmy for it, which was awesome, I think A&E would be stupid not to give Leah season three.
Well, Mike Rinder mentioned it recently that he thinks there's a pretty good chance that a season three is going to happen. It's just kind of a matter of when, and he won't be announcing it. A&E would be announcing it.
Well, yeah, and so people, I want you to put, you know, press it on A&E, because even though a lot of the episodes made me cry, it's like when the season ended, I'm like, wait, what am I supposed to watch now? Like, I got so invested. I told my best friend, and so I'm like, oh no, I'm having ex-Scientology withdrawals. And then they go, why don't you have them on your show? And when my best friend said that, I'm like, oh, that is good, because yeah, I'm going with withdrawals. People have told me, like, when is Leah still coming back? And I go, I don't know. If I find out, I will let America know, because, you know, what Leah is doing, what Mike is doing, what you are doing, what Juan McCavitt's father is doing, you guys are doing such a good job about, you know, do it, you know. And I know a lot of people at first say, okay, I'm not going to write a book. But in my opinion, you have to write a book. This, what's going on, people need to see in print what the ex-Scientologist has been going through.
I encourage everybody who comes out of Scientology to tell their story. And as a matter of fact, I created a Facebook group called SWAT, Scientology Whistleblowers, Observers, and Troublemakers on Facebook. And if people want to go to that group, what we do is we collect stories on there, and I encourage people to tell their story, whatever their experience was, whether it was about disconnection or abuse or loss or whatever they went through. I encourage people to tell their stories. So you're invited to go to the Facebook group called SWAT. And also, my website is www.escapingscientology.com. And people can go and read about my book. They can order the book through that website. But I also have additional information on that website that I couldn't fit into the book. And so there's lots of additional information, almost chapter by chapter, that you could read on that website that relates to the book that I couldn't fit into the book. So I really invite people to go to that website and read up on that. And, of course, I would love it if people supported it and bought my book through Amazon.com.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, people, because, okay, you're going to be up all night after you read Karen's book. Because it's a patroner. You're like, okay, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I know I should go to bed. But then I end up reading it. I'm like, and then I look, it's 5. I'm like, okay, I know. But no, it's the, you know, it's like one of the best books of the year. I mean, between you, Leah, and Sully that I talked to, and Holly Henley that I'm going to be having on the show at the end of February with his wife, because their story is, I'm reading it right now, and all I got to say, people, is, oh, my goodness, pick it up, read it, and I will let Facebook and Twitter know where, you know, everyone's books that they need to get to read this, because once you read something like this, it will open your eyes like you have never opened your eyes with anything ever again, my opinion.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so thank you for so much for coming on. Like I said, we can do a part two, and I know you and I are going to keep in touch. And my last question, though, so when you left, when you left for the last time, is that the last time you saw Peter, or were you ever able to see Peter again?
No, that was the last time I ever saw him. You know, when I escaped, I was at my mother's in Atlanta, and he called at her house for 3 days, and he stopped calling after the third day, so that was the last time. And I didn't speak with him when he called. My mother spoke with him. I was very afraid to get on the phone because I felt that I would break down and go back. So I didn't accept his phone calls, and he stopped calling after the third day, and that was the last time that we ever had any contact. So we actually got divorced through the mail, that the Scientology Syndicate just organized the divorce through the mail. Yeah.
That is, okay, that is crazy. Yes, part two, you guys, with me and Karen are coming. Karen, I will talk to you this week. Maybe we can do it at the end of February almost. But everyone, like I said, go buy her books. It's on Amazon. And then when you buy her books, you might as well buy like 3 or 4 to hand them, you know, out as birthday presents or Christmas presents for the next year, people. That makes a really good read, and you can give Karen, you know, you can give Karen's book to them. So, yes, but thank you so much for coming on, and I love talking to you, and I just wish you were able to, you know, be able to, you know, do more music with Peter, because On the Wings of Love was, like, the most biggest hit of, I believe, 82, so, I mean, so, yes, so, yeah, but thank you for coming on, and I'm, you know, I'm off to go to the grocery store, which I hate going to the grocery store, but, yes, but thank you for coming on, and I will talk to you later.
Carly, thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
I will talk
no
to you
problem.
Again soon. I look forward to part 2.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.